So I've shared before that a hobby that I have is playing video games, and there is a lot to avoid in kind of video game culture. But one little piece that actually I've found interestingly incarnational and deep is a phrase that gets thrown around when someone playing a video game maybe is taking it just a little too seriously. It's a little too wound up about what's going on in the video game world. And it's very simple. Go touch grass. The idea being, okay, you've been probably in your room staring at a screen for a little too long. Go outside. Remember that the real world exists. I find it remarkably direct and helpful. Even as we hear these readings this weekend, this is one of the rare times where the homily that I gave at the Latin Mass lines up also with the homily I'm going to give here, because the message is ultimately the same. It's this very concrete call to love one another. It's in that that we hear this kind of spiritual call to go touch grass, to remember what exists out there. And so it becomes a very practical kind of thing for us to reflect upon. And you know, you've heard me preach, I like preaching about the spiritual, the things that are kind of high and lofty, to remember where we came from, to remember where we're going. But love looks like something, and so we have to be concrete. So, very simply, the church gives us some good ways for us to examine our conscience, some good ways to tell us, hey, remember, go touch grass. And that is the spiritual and the corporal works of mercy. These should be a regular part of examining our consciences. This is how the church, in her wisdom down 2,000 years, has pulled together the call from Jesus, carried through by St. John, as we hear in the second reading, and so many of the saints down the centuries to love one another. So when was the last time we kind of ran through the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, recognizing that we are not called to do all of them, but we are called to live out some of them, depending on our gifts and talents, on our personalities? When was the last time we allowed the Lord to challenge us to love in new ways? And to be even more specific, to go, where am I maybe avoiding that call to love? Because we all probably have people or places or things that in the back of our mind, when we hear love one another, we go, yeah, we can talk all about this, Jesus, but I'm going to pretend that this thing back over here, this person back over there, doesn't exist, because I don't want you saying what I know you're going to say about it. Let the Lord go back there. It's the only way that we come to grow in love. And as we're being practical, I found this in my prayer to be a really good time to also just talk about some of the practical realities of loving in these parishes. And it's always good to reflect on that when we're in a period of transition. How do we love? How do we love Father Conway as the pastor? How do we love one another as fellow parishioners? How do we love those to whom God sends us from our community? So a few things to consider. It's not an exhaustive list, but a few that come to mind at this stage. One, accept the changes that come with courage and with grace. Just to begin there. I'm not saying don't grieve. We all need that chance to do that. Change is scary. Change hurts. We need the chance to grieve. Jesus desires to receive that. But so often our reaction to change is, in fact, to try and fight back against it, and to do so pretty roughly. And so to maybe give ourselves the chance for whatever the equivalent of a few deep breaths is before we start getting upset when a change is brought up, because inevitably things will change. They always do. So to remind ourselves and to remind one another, I need to accept this with courage and with grace. It's God Himself who takes the ugliness of the cross and brings the beauty of resurrected life. He can take the changes that happen within parish life and make something beautiful from them. And again, practically speaking, I'm not saying don't bring concerns to Father Conway, but instead, just reflect on how we walk that line of legitimately, like a child to their parent, bringing a concern, a fear, a worry, without complaining or piling on. And each of us needs to discern that in our own way, but it's good to remember that. I've been touched, as Father Conway's friend, to see how many people have kind of rallied to him and said, "Hey, Father, we're praying for you." So now I want to challenge that one step further. How can we help? Right? How does that become something that is lived out or practical? And the best thing to do is ask questions. "Father, where do you need help?" And to keep asking, because it's probably not terribly clear right now. But to keep asking, "How can I help?" And then to accept the answer. Because sometimes we have the idea of, "Well, actually, I think we kind of need to be doing this, or I really feel like it's an important time for this thing to be done." But maybe it's not. And so to accept the answer that's given and say, "Hey, this is how I'm being asked to help. And so I will do my best to give generously my time, of my skill set, or the thing that none of us like talking about, of my finances too. So I'm going to do the thing, and I'm going to go to the place that nobody likes preaching about, nobody likes having preached about, talk a little bit about finances." Because again, if we really do believe that the Lord is Lord of everything, that includes our finances and our attitudes towards money, that giving to the life of the church, it's actually the fifth precept of the church, to give to the material needs of the church. And it's interesting because, right, we know we're supposed to give to the poor, but the fifth precept of the church, of living out these commandments, which the first is actually to attend Mass on Sunday, so that gives you a sense of, like, these are important precepts, is to give materially, to give to the material needs of the church. So the church does need money to be able to do what it does. We're in the middle of a capital campaign, right, to have offices to be able to operate right from the heart of Cedar Rapids from. We take up a collection each week because we need to be able to keep the lights on. We need to be able to pay our staff. We need to be able to have a reserve to help the poor and so many other things. One thing that I will say, don't believe everything that popular Catholic media says, because if you would believe them, every diocese kind of takes money from parishes and then sends it to a secret slush fund that the Vatican has to do nefarious, wicked things with. I can only speak to our diocese, which I've served for 8 years. That's not how it works. And so, while it might be tempting to say, "Hey, I'm not going to give except to specific projects, because I don't want anything going to the diocese," it actually ends up hurting the parish the most. Because the parish needs to be able to pay its staff. Father Conway and I, and Father Felix then as well, will depend on them for the work that they do to free us to do the work to be priests. The money that does go to the diocese is called taxa. It's turned right back to us. Just throughout this week alone, like any other week, both Father Conway and I have had to call the diocese multiple times. We have a small number of people working in our tribunal, doing that good ministry of helping those who are in the process of an annulment. We have one HR person for the entire archdiocese. We have one auditor for the entire archdiocese. And it's their job to support priests who are in the ministry of pastor, those who are trying to minister to those who are heartbroken, who are in need of something to reconcile them and bring them back into the regular life of the church. If we don't give in the regular way, if we don't respond to the needs that are actually in front of us, we actually hurt our parish. We hurt one another. And just on a personal note, I've known Father Conway for 15 years. We all have our gifts and talents. He is one of the only priests who I know that I could say with confidence has an actual charism for administration. I'm not talking about, they practice so they're good at it. Hopefully all of us who are called to be pastors get there. He has a God-given talent, as well as a deep conviction that what is entrusted to him as the pastor is to be well spent. It's his responsibility, something he will have to answer to Jesus for. So I say that to encourage you before making a judgment to talk to him about how money is being spent. If you're confused, if you're not sure, as you look at an annual financial report, call him, talk to him. He can explain it to you. He can help you understand the broader context, the needs of the community. I didn't tell him what I was preaching on until I preached on it. And so he's like, make sure to tell people I didn't tell you to say that. So he didn't. That came from me. But I feel as we hear this call to love one another, it's good that it not be abstract, that it not just be the same old ways that we've always thought about it, but that it actually does hit home and challenge us to do the spiritual equivalent of going and touching grass, of actually loving in the concrete, of allowing this to sting our conscience, perhaps, yes, but also then to receive what Jesus gives, because in calling his disciples to love, like we hear in the gospel, we're called to something higher. I no longer call you slaves, I call you friends. And so by imitating Jesus in that sacrificial love that is in the traditional way, you know, the time, the talent, and the treasure, we live into the call to be friends with Jesus. And he's called us to be friends of his here, in this place, in these parishes. It looks like something. So may we hear his call today, not in the abstract, but as we receive him in the Eucharist, in this place, to concretely ask him to help us love, and to love like him. I don't know what that looks like for each of us, and I want to be very clear. I am 100% with Jesus. It isn't the amount that we give of our time, of our talent, of our treasure. The widow, the story of the widow's mite is key. She only gives those two small coins, but it's everything she has. She gives from her heart. Jesus doesn't ask us to give what we don't have, but he does ask us to give what we do have. And so if we can hear that call, we will also experience the Lord's love more deeply and live more fully into that friendship that he extends to each of us.